begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
I'm back.
We're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, other dickhead from the internet.
So I understand you're having a bit of a finger day. I am having the worst finger day. All sorts of coffee and I can't type and everything goes wrong.
I swear to God, the backslash and the pipe key, that's been moving on me today. I tried to type it a number of times and hit enter, which in a Unix shell can be problematic.
RM minus, I've done that. I did that from the root once on a production server that was hosting something like 18,000 users' websites.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I'm pretty sure we called that a technical failure.
Yeah, only briefly.
Hard drive.
Only briefly. Maybe. We had an excellent engineer who was able to recover things quite quickly, and that was lucky because, geez, if I'd been left to my own devices, just would have gone from bad to worse, frankly. I can be trusted, but only so far, put it that way.
We're discoursing live this week. It did look briefly like it wouldn't happen, but it seems to have. I'll explain that shortly. But we have a guest. Shall we just jump straight into it?
I've got a thing. Wait, I've got a thing. And we hardly ever get to use it except every week for the last 5 weeks.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
The guest I would like to introduce to you is Thomas Beagle, who is the, what did we decide, principal?
No, spokesperson. Yeah.
Spokesperson for Tech Liberty.
.org.nz. Hello, Thomas. Thank you so much for joining us.
I want to call you a tech libertarian.
Okay, you can.
I think you should get a business card with that, mate, on. I think that would be very nice.
Libertarian comes with a whole lot of baggage, though, because those
guys
are...
Yeah, there is that. So you need to hyphenate
worse than
it,
anarchists, frankly.
Oh, they are. So we're talking to you for a very specific reason. There's a piece of legislation we've followed on the show throughout its history, the Skynet Bill. And we've talked about it. We talked about it when it was introduced into Parliament and when it was debated and when it passed and when the first notices went out. And recently we talked about it when it was announced the first cases had been referred to the Copyright Tribunal. And most recently that I think there were four or six or something, and one of them was choosing to actually have a case presented in person. And that leads us to you, because I understand now that that case that was to be actually argued in person has been withdrawn by the Recording Industry Association of New Zealand, and you were instrumental in this, Thomas.
I helped, yes. She was the only person to ask for a formal hearing, which, of course, anyone can do, and they decided to turn it down. But we also sent in a fairly detailed submission as well, which pointed out basically how unfair it was in her case. We pointed out a number of technical flaws with the notices that she'd received, and we also pointed out that the request for $2,699 was quite ridiculous.
So that was one of the most interesting things I thought in your post at techliberty.org.nz was you actually outlined the amount that they wanted to claim as a penalty or reimbursement or whatever the term is, of which $1,075.50 was calculated as the cost of the music, specifically five music tracks.
Well, it's quite interesting because the regulations are quite specific about how the penalties can be assessed. And the first one is it's got to be basically if the work is available in New Zealand, which everyone agrees it is, and you can buy it on iTunes for $2.39 a track, that the cost of that track should be part of the penalty. Now, Rhiannon said that that's all very well, but we think that we're actually accusing her of sharing this track, and we're accusing her of sharing all five tracks, and that here's a wonderful survey that we paid for which says that the average track is downloaded 90 times, and therefore we're going to multiply this retail price by 90 times for each track, coming up with that much larger number.
So that's a 9,000% increase in cost in the retail cost.
Or even 90 times more.
Yeah, I like 9,000%. It's a bigger number.
And it's over 9,000 probably.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it might be 8,900%. I don't know. But so that's that. And there's also $375-ish, which is for reimbursing costs of notices and going to the tribunal. And
that's right. There's five notices plus GST plus $200 for the tribunal.
Great. And they don't charge any cost for handling at their end, though?
I'm not sure if there's a facility in the regulations for that.
Right. And then $1,250 as a deterrent.
Yes, they, their submission, which we're intending to publish some bits of soon, went on and on about how they were obviously a flagrant infringer of copyright, because, you know, based on the way that they kept on sharing even after they received these notices and so on, and that generally they're obviously a bad, bad person and needed to be stopped.
Right. And the so I'm just trying to find, there's a quote I saw from a spokesman for Rianz who said something along the lines of, this was working just as we wanted it to. We don't want to penalise people. We just want to discourage them or something.
That was in the NBR article, and it was only in the article for an hour or two when it got, until it got removed again.
Right, because I was going to say, it certainly was hard to argue that you didn't want to penalise someone when you have a specific, essentially, arbitrary penalty cost.
There's also a major problem with that argument as well, is that 2 days before the final day for her submission, at the suggestion of the lawyer, she sent him a offer to Rianz. She basically wants to just it all to go away. She offered to pay the fees, and you know, basically said that she didn't know what was happening and everything else. And Rianz wrote back and said, "No way, we're taking you to the tribunal. You're a bad person."
Excellent. So the one of the things I thought was interesting, one of the points that's come out of this is that obviously, in her case, she's claiming, and we have nothing else to go on, that she had no knowledge of any of this infringement, that her flatmates were possibly responsible, although none of them admitted it either. And
that's
really
basically correct. Yeah, she knew for a little bit. I mean, I had to explain how BitTorrent worked and so on.
So there is, and there's no way, I mean, in a practical sense, certainly after the fact, there's no way for her to prove one way or the other that A, it originated from her network, or B, from specifically where within her network.
That's always been one of the major problems with the law, is that you'll be told that a month ago you were sharing this file or downloading this file, and how can you prove what you were or weren't doing a month ago? I mean, it's very hard to prove you weren't doing something in the first place, let alone back in the past.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a general argument in logic terms that it's impossible to prove a negative, and even harder when proving that negative in this case requires pretty serious networking equipment. So in the end, they just withdrew the case when she challenged them and left it at that?
I believe that the most likely case was because of the technical flaws in the notices. And particularly one of them, there was a few minor breaches of the regulations, but the real major flaw was that there's some time frames.
Yeah, there's a stand down period.
Once you've received a notice, is a stand down period before the next infringement can trigger another notice. And Telecom had made a mess of delivering the notices, but as best as we could tell, one of them was actually done 22 days afterwards, and therefore it just wasn't even valid.
Right. And there was another quote in the NBR article that also seems to be gone now, and that is where Rianz said this was working as they wanted it to, and that once people contacted them and they explained what, you know, they had a lot of people contact them and explain what file sharing was, and you know that people would contact Rianz and Rianz would explain what file sharing was, and they would understand and help them, you know, put in some firewalls or whatever, and then they would consider the matter resolved and wouldn't bother with that person again or something to that effect, which is absurd because there's no way Rianz, upon issuing a notice, can know who they're issuing the notice to.
But when you receive a notice, you actually have a chance to appeal it, and that appeal does go to people who sent the notice.
Right.
It is actually done blindly through the ISP, though, so Rianz doesn't know who
it is. Which is the only way it could be reasonable. Mm. All right, so do we know what's going to happen with any of the others or when they'll be heard? Are you in contact with any of the other people who are being taken to the copyright tribunal?
No, but I'd love to hear from them or anyone else who actually received some notices. I mean, all the ones I've seen have actually had technical flaws in them. I still haven't seen a proper notice yet, for example.
Yeah.
But the other seven cases, I believe, are all going, are just being done on the papers, not being done by a formal hearing.
So it's just a written argument. So do you think Rianz is hoping that they will get a full settlement for all of these, or are they going to accept, like, if someone says, "Oh well, I'll pay your fees and the deterrent fee," will they accept that, do you think, or is it
their submission was fairly long and spent a lot of time talking about the amount the penalties should be. Right. And they were explicitly saying themselves that they saw this as setting a precedent, and they saw it as setting the initial level, shall we say, which is why they're asking for quite large sums of money, because they want to set that level fairly high.
Yeah, although it's quite reasonable sums of money when you put it in the scale of some of the overseas cases of this nature.
I wouldn't say it's reasonable.
Well, it's not millions of dollars.
I'd say it's not as unreasonable as some of the overseas cases, perhaps.
Yeah. All right.
Dylan's not always good at expressing that kind of thing. So I would like to actually ask you, there's a couple of stories that are coming up later on. Number one, it's a story from the Washington Post, Shut Up and Play Nice, How the Western World is Limiting Free Speech. And also we'll be discussing how Twitter's been removing various racist and anti-Semitic tweets under various European laws. In New Zealand, we have a Communications New Media Bill, I think, coming up.
Yes.
One of the results of that is going to be it'll be criminal to say something that's grossly offensive or indecent or obscene or menacing. And basically, you can't say something that is likely to cause emotional distress, is how I read it, how I interpret it.
Morgan, you're a horrible person.
Right. Well, I'm really upset that you said that. I'm going to go into a dark weeks-long depression, and I want the police to bang down your door and grab you. But also, you know, people can say racist things, or they can say things against various religions and so on. And you know, a person who I think is unreasonable might have a sincere level of emotional distress. But how can we let emotional distress be the benchmark for whether you can say something or not? I feel like that's a terrible thing. Have you done any thinking about this, or any have you studied?
Yes, if you actually scroll down the page at techliberty.org.nz, notice that careful plug there, you will find quite a large article about with an analysis of the Law Commission's report and their suggestions and the resulting bill.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the can you do for emotional distress, it's actually quite interesting if you look at it. That we already have some laws which allow for that. A lot of our privacy laws are actually about limiting emotional distress. So it's not quite as simple as just saying, oh, people don't get their feelings hurt. On the other hand, it's also pretty clear that you want the bar to be very, very high, yeah, I believe. Yeah. Otherwise, you will just get people, you know, you'll get people in pissy little blog wars, comment wars, you know, claiming each other's been hurt and so on. It's obviously going to be set to a fairly high level of distress to actually trigger any legal ramifications.
And the problem is it's very hard to put that kind of thing in writing, isn't it? You can't really write down that someone needs to be really just badly hurt.
And I think not just badly hurt, not just... you know, seriously emotionally distressed, but emotional distress for a reasonable person, because there are a lot of unreasonable people around who might feel distressed, but who cares, because they're crybabies. And we can't run we can't run our whole society based on coddling crybabies.
Absolutely. There is a lot of protections in the bill. I'm not saying I agree with it, but there is actually a lot of ramifications, and it's actually going to go to a copyright, a comms tribunal,
right,
who will have these jobs of determining this, that, and the other. I think it goes too far. I think it does actually unfairly limit freedom of speech and so on. Yeah. But I'm not completely against the idea of saying that there shouldn't be some protection on that sort of level, especially for some of the people who are actually deliberately trying to hurt other people quite seriously by their speech and so on.
Right. Fair enough. It is just it's that thing about how do you codify that in a reasonable way, and hopefully we can figure out a way to do it, I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know, man. I don't think there's a reasonable way to limit free expression, freedom of speech, and so on. I just don't think...
We already do limit freedom of expression so much in our society. If you look at our censorship laws, if you look at the laws about around suicide reporting, if you look at the Broadcasting Standards Authority, if you look at a whole lot of things. I mean, I'm pretty keen on freedom of expression as well, but... Let's not be under any illusions that we've got this sort of untrammeled freedom of expression in New Zealand.
Fair enough. And I suppose there's these things that in real life would definitely get you in trouble with the police that are on the internet perhaps don't.
Oh, and things that in real life, but conversely, there are things in real life that you can do. You are allowed to get someone to piss in your mouth, but you're not allowed to put a video of it up on the internet.
Thank you for that.
Was my example no good? All right, you can get someone to cut their arm and bleed into your eyes, but and while you beat off. But if you put a video of it up on the internet, then that is obscene for some reason.
Yeah, absolutely. There are actually a number of existing laws. As you say, there's the harassment laws. There's also, I mean, it's illegal to make threats of violence and so on already, whether it's online or offline.
Yeah.
There's no real doubt about that.
Yeah.
I will punch you in the nose.
I am going to arrange your murder. Thomas, I think that I'm told that you have very little time with us.
He's got a very important video game to play.
You've got a long drive ahead of you.
Forza Horizon has just been released today, and I do have it in my hot little hands.
And thank you. I'm sure you paid for it as well. And thank you. What I just said could have been taken to be sarcastic. It wasn't. We were just talking about copyright stuff. So I thought it was a natural aside. I'm not suggesting that Thomas has ever stolen any media. So
I'm actually vaguely surprised we haven't mentioned discourse.co.nz/VPN as we do sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a universal solvent. Thank you so much. Well, basically, if you keep listening to the asides, we'll ruin all your gaming time for the whole evening because we never shut up. It has been really, it's been great having you on the show.
Sure, it's been fun.
And next time...
Well, thanks for your single-minded pursuit of this sort of thing as well.
Yeah.
Because it is fairly single-minded, I assume. Maybe not. Multiple
times. I have a life, honest.
We believe you.
And next time... Now, I'm not promising this, but I suggest that if we have you on the show again, I am less likely to talk about people getting pissed in the mouth.
Excellent.
That specific thing is unlikely to be mentioned again.
Yeah, that specific thing.
Other things of that.
I was expecting you to wind it up, Dylan, because I've tried three times.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Thomas. And feel free to, you know, download the show and listen to it all and be horrified at what comes after you leave.
Okay, thanks, guys. Ciao.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Thank you for leaving me hanging, Dylan.
He'll be horrified. You know it.
Do I have to do all the words? Is that the way this works? I do all of them. Hey, so guess what? I'm going to do all the words. Several things. I heard a shitty new podcast this week. It was awful.
Oh, did you?
Yep. Yep.
What was wrong with it?
Any ideas what I might be talking about? It was awkward and pausey.
Oh, yeah. Probably said and you know a lot.
There was also an Australian on it. Good grief.
Just one Australian at least.
An actual Australian called Sale or something, or Sale.
Yeah, Kyle?
This is episode 31, and we have never had an episode 31 of Discourse before. I don't think we've ever had a 30 or a 29, possibly even a 28 before, but, you know, I'm just pointing it out now.
No one ever has.
I don't know when we'll switch over to season 4. Might never.
Probably just stop making this one at some point. There's a fairly good chance that sometime around Christmas we'll stop doing them for a while.
Have a break and then go on to 4. And one more thing, the beer prize... which I've been trying to give away to the winner. Who was the winner?
I can't remember.
It seems like such a long time ago now.
It was literally weeks.
I think that was actually in 329 when we drew that.
That was 28. Oh, what is it? 31 now.
Was it 28?
Oh, okay. No, it was 29. You're right. 2 weeks ago.
So why is that? Oh, so the winner was Nick Steenhout. Never got in touch. Never ever got in touch.
The
chat room has suggested that I have probably consumed the stuff. I'll have you know that there are 5 bottles remaining. That's the reality of the situation. I have not consumed it all. I'm not drinking Epic Orcon Pale Ale tonight. I'm drinking something entirely different, in fact. And Nick, I don't know, man. You had to get in touch. You had to listen to the show to hear that you'd won, or visit the website, and you never did. You never got in touch, so I don't really know what we're going to do now.
Well, we didn't. Oh, here we go with competitions again. We weren't clear. Maybe we should email them.
I'm just annoyed by people entering discourse competitions who aren't discourse people.
Yeah.
It's like New Zealand for New Zealanders, discourse for discourses.
Discourse, oh, good. New Zealand for New Zealanders. This is something we should pursue.
Oh, definitely. Speaking of which, and so something happened last week. Some unreasonable person who self-identifies as a libertarian on Twitter and has criticized the show on Twitter to you since popped in, I guess, for the first time. Yeah.
Let's. What did you call them?
Self-identified libertarian.
Yeah, there's something else. Anyway, okay, carry on.
He popped in and said, is this a lefty podcast, is it? I thought it was a tech thing or something like that. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something like that. He said, is this a lefty podcast? And of course, I don't think of it like that, but I suppose maybe it is. So perhaps that means, and our guests, for some reason, tend to be as well. I mean, we've had David Farrar on. We've had a bunch of lawyers on. We just had another one on. But of course, he seems like a sort of a lefty sort of a lawyer. And so are we alienating people who think of themselves as being right-wing inclined? Because I do think of myself as a bit of a lefty, but I don't think of myself as exclusively a lefty. I feel like I'm diverse in terms of my political opinions. And I don't want to alienate those people because, you know, people all across the spectrum have really, you know, insight to offer.
We've talked about this maybe briefly in the past. While probably most of what I tend to believe is, you know, left wing, typically speaking, yeah. I don't identify with a specific party, and I'm not even that partisan. There are, you know, the occasional right wing idea that I prefer, and it frustrates me. Not so much, you know, you can easily identify left or right wing, but it frustrates me to see people blindly attacking anyone on the other team for anything without, you know, hypocritically and unreasonably.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like we have attacked pretty much everyone in the entire New Zealand political system. I mean,
yeah, even the Green Party occasionally.
Absolutely. They had a terrible candidate, right, in Hamilton. Terrible candidate.
Terrible candidate in Hamilton, and they...
Some of their policies are not that great. I wasn't in favour of the smacking bill. Yeah, that's right. They don't have nearly enough representatives from Auckland. Never mind that they would never win an electorate in Auckland. Well, not in the next couple of decades.
Well, who knows? I mean, there has been a swing toward them from disaffected Labour supporters. So.
Yeah, but it's 15%, and I don't think they're going to get much above 20-25% ever.
Yeah.
Ever, right.
But, I mean, I guess I described it on Twitter as, he said, is it a tech podcast or a political podcast or something? I said it was a ranty podcast. We simply talk about what interests us, and what interests us tends to be tech-related and sometimes is politics-related, and especially if the two come together.
Yeah. If it was just tech, it would be very difficult to suggest that we could make a useful New Zealand podcast about it because, let's be honest, not a lot of the tech news comes out of New Zealand.
And there is already a New Zealand tech podcast, and really there's no need to try and fight over that small niche.
I don't want it. I find that stuff quite boring.
I mean, I can't hold, it doesn't hold my attention enough either, and it's not stuff that I'm into day to day, so, you know, I like tech stories. I'm not keen on doing the whole tech thing. Yep. So you just get what you get.
I just like the conversation that we have. We talk about the news of the week.
It's ranty bullshit news.
I would say it wasn't all bullshit news.
It's ranty, full stop.
It is ranty, semicolon. And now the news.
And now
the news. So anyway, the upshot of that is I feel like maybe we need to have more kind of self-identified right-wing guests on. I don't know how we're going to do that or when we'll do that because so far we just have people who we think are interesting on and... I don't know that their politics always even come into it. I mean, obviously, you know, when we had Gareth on, it was because he had done such a friggin' stand-up job in the debating chamber. We had Jacinda Ardern on for the same reason. They both happen to be left-wing. I don't know when the last time is that a right-wing politician did a great job in the chamber.
Well, Morris Williamson just the other day, but was great for perhaps a different reason.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not opposed to it. The problem is that people don't, you know, the right people aren't springing to our attention. So certainly if you're listening and you know of a, you know, a friendly right winger who is interesting to talk to and has an angle for us, then we're keen. I would like to talk to Tau Henare sometime. I'm not sure what about. Maybe about his aspirations to be Speaker of the House.
I think he'd be great.
Yeah, I think he would too. Last time I tried to approach him, it was a difficult time politically and he wasn't able to speak to us, at the time.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll approach him again, see what happens.
Yeah.
The news.
And now the news.
And now the news. Something that I referred to when we were just wrapping up with Thomas there, the first of the five times, Dylan.
Six or seven times.
Thanks, Dylan. That was great.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Shut up and play nice, how the Western world is limiting free speech. Free speech is dying in the Western world. While most people still enjoy considerable freedom of expression, this right, once a near absolute, has become less defined and less dependable for those espousing controversial social, political, or religious views. The decline of free speech has come not from any single blow, but rather from thousands of paper cuts of well-intentioned exceptions designed to maintain social harmony. And this is exactly what we were talking about. You know, we're suggesting that perhaps you shouldn't be able to arrange someone's murder. Even though, you know, you're speaking and you should be able to do free speech and you should be able to say, I'm going to cut your balls off at someone loudly. Should you be able to say that? I don't think you should. I think you should be able to. I think you shouldn't say it.
Well, I think you should be able to, but I don't think you should be able to and not and be entirely free of consequence.
That's right. Consequence is an important thing. Isn't it? And I don't know that it has to always be legal. I think there can just be social consequence.
No, but I guess the thing is to say that there can be a consideration for it. The problem, and I think the little summary you read there highlights that the problem is probably that it's been done in such a piecemeal approach that it's very inconsistent. Yeah. Perhaps there is a way to do it, but in a more sort of all-in-one approach and kind of establish a framework in which this kind of thing can be managed and an even-handed approach to it.
Hate crimes. A lot of people would say, yeah, you shouldn't be able to commit hate crimes. How about being on your own private property and burning a cross on your private property? Should
you? Exactly.
I mean, that, you know, if you're a Ku Klux Klan member and you do that, everyone is going to take the message pretty clearly. But I think you should still be able to do it.
Yeah, hate crimes is really problematic.
Yeah.
It's an okay idea in some circumstances. It seems to get, I'm going to say implemented. It seems to come about very awkwardly.
Yeah. Blasphemy. You know, there are people who hold their religion really dearly, right? And if I say there are no gods, you know, some people in the world would actually try to murder me for that. There are countries in the world where they'd probably get away with it.
I think I think maybe the big issue is the internet has amplified speech to such a level that it now becomes an issue. Obviously, you know, when people were photocopying off their own flyers or standing on a soapbox on the corner of the street, it was pretty easy to not really worry about them or to deal with them on, you know, an individual basis. But now the internet amplifies that to such a massive degree that people feel they need to have legislation and restrictions and regulations, and maybe there's a legitimate need to, but I don't think it's being done.
But there's TV stuff as well. Some of the things that Bill Maher says, if he said them in Iran, he'd be beheaded. Right,
yes.
Right. So you're right that it's an internet thing, kind of in terms of disseminating it. There are different community standards and, you know, national community standards in some places than in others. And you know, the expectation that one country is going to be able to hold another country's citizens to their local standard is obviously part of the problem. And this is why, I think last week or the week before, we mentioned Saudi Arabia suggesting at the UN that there should be some global standard on this.
I think it's a different thing than this. But, yeah, I think on a national level there's certainly reason to look at how, not speech is limited, but, you know, where the law comes into it.
Yeah.
But on an international level, it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense to have the social norms of one country becoming law in another country.
Yeah.
It's just not practical.
Yeah.
Or reasonable or fair.
It doesn't seem fair to me.
So you had another censorship thing. About the tweets and the heaps.
Well, Twitter agreed to remove racist and anti-Semitic tweets that were being posted under French hashtags. I don't know what the hashtags were. Because, I mean, I probably wasn't going to be interested in reading them. Because I actually don't want to read, you know, horribly racist and anti-Semitic stuff. I don't mind reading jokes that are, you know, possibly racist or anti-Semitic. They don't tend to be the best. But I don't want to see, you know, actually genuinely racist and anti-Semitic stuff. I'm not interested in it. You know,
yeah,
at all. And anyway, so there was a Jewish, I guess, like one of those Jewish anti-defamation groups. They threatened to sue Twitter for breaching French national laws against hate speech. And Twitter said, all right, well, we're going to hide that, I guess. I don't know if they deleted them or if they just hid them in France. Because in the past, what they've done is hide particular tweets or hashtags only in particular jurisdictions, which is about as good as you can hope for, I think. They did the same thing in Germany when there was a I mean, all neo-Nazi and Nazi stuff, I think, is actually illegal in Germany.
Very much.
And that is ridiculous.
To it for some reason.
Well, they should be sensitive to it because it's their fault. But they should be grown up enough as a nation that they can have, you know, swastikas around without fucking shoveling people into poison showers and then burning their bodies. Right? It's like making women cover up their ankles because otherwise they might get raped. You know, you're fixing the symptom, not the cause. Does that make any sense? Did I get the right way around?
More or less.
It's not the swastikas that are the problem, right? It's the murdering that's the problem. It's the trains that are the problem.
Yeah. Right? I guess if Twitter is either, if they were tweets from French users, then maybe it was reasonable to delete them. And if they are hiding them from French viewers, then that's probably reasonable as well. Yeah. But again, if it's, you know, French law being applied to people outside of France, that's not very practical.
Yeah.
The
Jewish group was not the Jewish Anti-Defamation League. It was the French Union of Jewish Students.
Oh, they're the worst.
Well, they, I don't know about them. Religious people tend to be the worst, though, in terms of being crybabies. Getting upset by things which, you know, possibly are offensive to them, but just don't look.
Yeah, I mean, the Jewish thing still has a very special place, especially in Europe, some parts of Europe anyway, and in America. They're very sensitive to it still.
Yeah, and frankly, I think the time has now come that it's not too soon anymore.
No, probably not. I think we're probably...
Everyone knows the story. Everyone knows the unbelievable suffering, the misery, and the just aberrant behaviour of, you know, the Germans and... Not so much the Italians, but they were idiots getting involved. And the Japanese as well in Asia. They did some pretty fucking shocking stuff as well. And I'm sure that the Allies did terrible things too, but not so systematically. Everyone knows the stories. Everyone knows about all the millions who died. The tens of millions who died in Russia. Everyone knows. People who make jokes about it, aside from the deniers. You know, I'm not going to pretend to think that the deniers are all right. But maybe it's time that that Ricky Gervais can get away with making an Anne Frank joke.
Certainly.
All right, because I think his joke is funny.
Well, I don't know the joke, but... Look it up. It's... Yeah, I will. All right, I've got one.
Hey, I've got a button.
Next story.
Okay, well, actually, it's your one as well. I'm stealing it.
Mm-hmm. You can get it wrong too.
In Italy, recently.
Oh, yeah.
There was some scientists.
Those guys are crybabies too. They all live with their mum, and they only eat one kind of food.
Well, now they're going to live in jail. And probably still just eat one kind of food.
All of them? Wow.
All of them. Expensive. Seven of them have been guilty of manslaughter of some 308 people.
Holy shit. What did they do? Did they make an explosion accidentally? Did they crash a train? Were they engineers and they made a building fall down?
They failed to predict or alternatively...
You're changing your story since I told you the facts. Go on. Do it the way you're originally going to do it and then let me hand your ass to you.
No, they failed to predict, or more accurately, they offered reassurances that an earthquake wasn't likely.
Yeah.
Is that right? And therefore, they were held culpable for the deaths of the earthquake. When had they not made those reassurances, people may have taken precautions such as, I guess, getting the hell away from the earthquake before it happened. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Now, there's a New Zealand angle on it as well, where they've talked to genius scientists.
Kelvin Berryman?
Yes, Kelvin Berryman, who said he's not surprised at the verdict because the scientists failed to do their job.
Yeah. And the thing is that what they didn't fail to predict it. What they did was they were too optimistic with the press. They told people not to worry. They told people to go home and have a glass of wine and everything would be fine. And they shouldn't have said that. What they should have said was, we aren't sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, I guess. I don't know if a genius scientist who knows about this sort of thing says they didn't do their job properly, then I guess they didn't do their job properly. But it seems, from the outside, it seems like, holy shit, you're holding people to account for the crazy actions of the Earth.
Yeah. That's right, and that is a problem, and that's why I think that this is out. This is actually quite ridiculous. It's reasonable maybe to question why these people got it wrong, you know, in the way that they addressed the media. But it's not reasonable to put them in jail for manslaughter because they clearly didn't do that.
So what I haven't seen about it, what I haven't seen is an accurate accurate timeline of the events. Like, when did they say that it was all okay, and when did the earthquake happen? Because, I mean, you can't, you know, once things are starting to be seismically active, you can't say, oh, earthquake pending any minute now, because it just becomes, you know, chicken who cried wolf. People get on edge, and then nothing happens, and then nothing happens, and then nothing happens, and then nothing happens, and then there's a bloody big earthquake.
Yeah.
So the three news article says, just days after the town was told, says the earthquake struck, just days after the town was told there was no need for alarm. But I'm not sure what just days means in this sense. I mean,
150 days.
Yeah, if you can know that there is a higher than normal chance of an earthquake, that's fine. But how much higher than normal and when, you know, I don't know. But like I say, if someone who knows what the fuck they're talking about says that they weren't doing their job properly, then I guess they weren't doing the job properly.
According to Kevin in the chat room, they said it is unlikely that an earth, but in Italian, and I'm not going to do an accent. It is unlikely that an earthquake like the one in 1703 could occur in the short term, but the possibility cannot be totally excluded, which sounds to me pretty reasonable.
It sounds to me pretty much exactly like what, you know, GNS scientists say.
So what are the this is from a TV3 article. So what are the chances of scientists here being prosecuted? A leading law expert, who is not named here, says there would be no chance of a similar case happening here, as scientists would never be held responsible for deaths as a result of an earthquake.
Exactly.
Which seems reasonable.
I mean, that was the thing, when there was a bunch of earthquakes happening around Ruapehu and things, and everyone's like, there's going to be a volcano. The scientists are like, no, there isn't. It's not how it works. Yeah. And we go, okay, fine. Yeah. You know, we just have to trust them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think the Earth works exactly how we think it does sometimes.
I don't really trust them. I'm actually slightly anxious about living in a volcanic field sometimes.
Yeah, well, my favourite thing about the Auckland volcanic field is apparently it's not the volcanoes you can see that you need to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ones that just will pop up wherever the fuck they want to.
It's always new cones. Yeah, it's always new breakthroughs. Yeah.
Middle of Parnell Road.
Fucking hell. Think of all the new northern exposure slopes, though. Oh, man.
Oh, great. I got another one.
Hey!
Next
story.
There's a crazy Republican. Have we done crazy Republican stories before? I can't remember.
Is he sucking or is he getting sucked?
Different angle.
All right.
Crazy Republican, although this is another crazy Republican. Crazy Republican Joe Walsh from Illinois. Told reporters recently that there should be no exception to abortion laws for the life of the mother because, quote, with modern technology and science, you can't find one instance, quote, in which a woman would actually die. There is no such exception as life of the mother as far as the health of the mother is the same thing.
So is this guy, is he a doctor?
No.
Does he have the first fucking clue what he's saying?
No, I wouldn't imagine so.
No, I wouldn't imagine so. Yeah.
So there's a variety of there's a variety of situations in which the health of the mother or the life of the mother could be endangered by an ongoing pregnancy, but not in Republican land, bullshit mountain. So there you go. That was bizarre.
Because
that was always
see.
The exception they made. You know, there was two exceptions. For, there was if the health or the life of the mother is in danger, then okay, abortion's all right, and in situations of incest or rape, then okay, abortion's all right. But it turns out that, in fact, there's no need for the health or life thing because modern science makes that irrelevant, although modern science in this case probably is an abortion. And there's no need for the rape or incest thing because, you know, if it's a legitimate rape, the body shuts that right down.
Yeah. Birth and death rates. No, this isn't deaths and birth. I need... Not even infant mortality. I need mortality of mothers and birth. Oh,
yeah, it's difficult. I'm not sure how you find the right one. Well, you do that and I'll find another one. I've got another one.
Hey, wait, it's...
Next story.
You remember how the Samsung Galaxy Tab is a flagrant copy of the Apple iPad? Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember that well.
Yeah. No, it's not.
Oh, God damn it. My iPad, I scratched the screen. Oh, I scratched the screen.
Now, you know, if you went and bought a Galaxy Tab, I bet it would have the same scratch on the screen.
Yeah, the exact same scratch. Every iPad or Galaxy Tab that have ever been scratched, they all are synchronous somehow. It's morphic resonance.
So according to the
scientists can't explain it. It's got something to do with chaos theory.
A judge has decreed that Samsung's tablets do not copy the iPad.
Yeah.
They do not have the same understated and extreme simplicity which is possessed by the Apple design. Quote, they are not as cool.
Right.
Now, Apple has to publish this. They have to basically publish things, publish statements and put a statement on their website that says that the Samsung Galaxy Tab is not an infringement of Apple's design.
Suck it!
So it's not about whether Samsung copied Apple's iPad. Infringement of a registered design does not involve any question of whether there was copying. The issue is simply whether the accused design is too close to the registered design, according to the tests laid down in law. So that is to say, Samsung could have bought an iPad, set it down at a table, and gone, oh, we quite like what this is doing, and made something that's similar. But as long as it's not too similar, it hasn't infringed on a registered design, which was the claim that Apple made.
Yeah, just to bum this out just for a second, I found United States maternal mortality statistics. They do extremely well, and if you look at the graph, it's never been better. But even so, with one of the better medical systems in the world, 8 mothers die in childbirth or while pregnant per 100,000.
Jesus. Well, I suppose.
It's a pretty good rate. Ours is about 15. 8 versus 15. So they're 121st out of 136 countries in this list. So there you go. When he says there's none, he is mistaken. We already knew that, of course. Sorry, as you were with the Samsung Apple stuff, it's much more important, of course, than life and death, isn't it?
I think so. Because it's pretty. That's the basic thing. That Apple has to publicise that the claims they made about Samsung copying them were not upheld.
So a chat room, Eddie Caudry says, I'm surprised Apple hasn't tried to copyright coolness. I think he means patent. But if you've seen some of Apple's old print ads, you will know that they have no claim on coolness whatsoever. Apple have done some unbelievably cheeseball things in the past.
I would also make the same claim of their UI, and there's so many UI conventions in iOS that I just hate.
Yeah.
Especially that their weird skeuomorphic leathery bullshit wood. I'll hate all that.
I got no time for skeuomorphism.
No.
I don't need torn paper on a screen. You're just wasting pixels, especially on a mobile device. Just stop it.
Next story.
All those pixels.
Speaking of stealing,
won't somebody think of the pixels?
Oh my God, Dylan. Netflix caught stealing DivX subtitles from Finnish pirates. So Finland has recently had a Netflix service, Netflix streaming service.
There's a strong rumour apparently that they'll be launching in New Zealand next year.
That would be very interesting.
Carry on.
And here's the thing. In the subtitles that they added to their new Finnish streaming service, there were references to the pirate site where they downloaded the friggin' subtitles from. They hadn't gone through and cleared them out, probably because they couldn't read it.
I wonder if there were, or if it was, well, not that they downloaded them from the pirate site, but there are lots of open subtitle places online. You know, you can essentially get subtitles for a specific movie, and obviously they're usually paired with pirated movies, but you can get them individually, you know, away from the movie. So I wonder if someone had got a subtitle off one of those sites and then distributed it on one of those open subtitling
kind of
sites.
You know, I once wrote subtitles for a movie in a language that I didn't even understand. I more edited. I can't even remember it was a Thai movie. I can't even remember what it was. But they were terrible. I watched through once and I was like, those subtitles were awful. So then I watched through a second time and just using Notepad, I edited the file, knowing what was about to come up, and I just edited it to make more sense. I've got no idea if they were saying the right things. But in terms of the story, it worked really well.
One of the first jobs I had at one of the places I worked was putting subtitles on Mormon training videos.
Awesome. Have you heard the good news, Dylan?
So the training videos were in English, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
with strong American accents. And the subtitles I was putting on, I was doing two versions, yeah. One in Samoan and one in Tongan.
Right. Awesome. No, I don't know that. No, how fluent are you in Samoan?
I'm not especially fluent in Samoan or Tongan. Yeah. It was a very strange, very, very strange experience.
Yeah.
Made stranger by the specific technology I was using to actually apply the subtitles, which was even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Opensubtitles.org was the website I was thinking of.
Right.
Carry on. Next story.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know if they stole the stuff or not, or if they just shouldn't have used it, but it sounds like, and I can't, I mean, there's like an auto-translated version of the page which talks about, you know, the Finnish people have caught them out with the reference to the pirate site and the captions. I don't know the whole story. I just know it as it's been reported, and it's pretty funny to me because, you know, these media companies, they put on their big boots and they talk about piracy and then they feel free to copy stuff themselves. You know, so that's basically the long and the short of it.
Yeah, I just assume they weren't checking their sources clearly well enough.
Yeah.
Next story.
PMS. And this story is shorter win over all the ladies. PMS. It may not exist.
I'm just going to bow out of this.
There is no clear evidence that women get more moody in the premenstrual phase of their cycles, researchers report. The team analysed 41 research studies that tracked women's daily moods through their menstrual cycles. Their findings, which showed no clear evidence that premenstrual syndrome exists, are published online now in the journal Gender Medicine.
Unsurprisingly, these researchers are single.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Is that fair?
Don't know.
I mean, obviously, we need to maintain deniability in both of our cases. But, you know, there's a certain amount of moodiness at all times. You know, a certain amount of irrationality and instability on all days, frankly. It's just the nature of the beast. Dylan's being very quiet.
Yeah, I'm not involved. I don't know what you're talking about.
Next story.
This one might be a little bit closer to home, Dills. Excessive hot Cheetos consumption blamed for bloody stool scare.
What are hot Cheetos?
The chips, the corn chips, I think.
Okay, so it's hot in this case is spicy. Okay, cool.
And it's American food product, so it's probably not even particularly spicy.
According I thought there was some sort of way of eating them, consuming them while they were warm.
Right, yum. Flamin' Hot Cheetos have been causing something of a panic among parents whose kids shovel the stuff in by the bagful, resulting in a reddish stool that sends them running to the emergency room.
Good luck.
Now, my fondest memory of... you know, something along these lines, but not red, so not very scary. I ate a special All Blacks ice cream in about 1984, and everything went kind of bright blue-green. Like bright. Not just a bit green. Not kind of earthy green, but like chemical toxic green. And that was a very exciting day for young Morgan. Tell you what, the realization that the stuff that went in actually had stuff in it other than just flavour. You know, it's a lesson that all of us need to learn, probably, at some point.
Next story.
I remember spewing after I drank bubbly once.
Yeah.
It was bright, like, reddy purple.
Yeah.
That was the first time I realised that you could spew out the colour of what you'd just eaten.
Yeah. I woke up on a friend's sofa one morning after a night out doing the most intensive professional-level drinking of my life. And I wake up and I look down at my shirt and I go, oh my God, I'm covered in blood. Where did all this blood come from? But it turns out that if you puke enough Sambuca, it looks sort of like encrusted blood on your shirt. I felt great though. I woke up feeling absolutely chipper. No hangover, but good Lord. Man, I was really, I was behaving inappropriately. Inappropriately. It was great fun. It's another story.
Next story.
This is related to my inappropriate drinking, but more from the past than from the present. Monster energy drink, so this is close to my heart, linked to death, which I do not like the sound of. An energy drink sold in New Zealand, thankfully, has been linked to deaths in the United States, unfortunately. Monster Beverage Corporation, who make the drink Monster, are being sued by the family of a 14-year-old girl who died after she consumed two large cans of Monster energy drink in 24 hours, which sounds unlikely.
It does seem very unlikely.
You know, maybe she drank two cans of Monster Energy drink and then was hit by a bus.
Sure.
Maybe she drank two cans of energy drink, Monster energy drink, and went into a diabetic coma because she already had diabetes and shouldn't have been fucking drinking it.
Yeah.
Maybe she was, as the chat room says, maybe she was born with some congenital defect, in which case, you know, you can't hold other people responsible for your own shit, frankly. Anyway, drink everything responsibly, especially Monster. I stopped drinking the full sugar one just because it was too insane and went to the blue one, which has low sugar, but it still has all the chemicals. All the other chemicals. It's dangerous stuff, that.
Next story.
Speaking of chemicals, water quality figures make a splash. New water quality grades for... And this is something we've spoken about before, because if you recall, John Key speaking on Hard Talk, I think on BBC, talking about how New Zealand, if you went up a hill... You know, if you went up a mountain and looked around, New Zealand pretty much looked 100% pure, you know. From a great enough distance, pretty much looked 100% pure, you know, approximately. New water quality grades for New Zealand's swimming spots have been covered widely by media in the wake of... This is from the Science Media Centre. By media in the wake of a surprisingly high number of swimming spots being labelled as poor or very poor. Of the 458 monitored beaches that were graded in 2012, 17% of freshwater beaches and 18% of the coastal beaches were graded as very good, which is great news. A further 15% of freshwater and 42% of coastal beaches were graded as good. However, 24% blah, blah, blah were graded as blah, 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 and 21% of recreational freshwater beaches and 3% of coastal beaches used for recreation were graded as very poor, high risk, should be avoided for swimming. 21% of recreational freshwater beaches should be avoided for swimming, according to official stats. That is not fucking good news for a country that presents itself to the world as 100% pure.
A lot of freshwater beaches?
I guess what they really mean is places where you swim on a river.
Like lakes and rivers and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's some approximation.
Well, I think you should not go chasing waterfalls.
Don't go chasing
waterfalls. You should stick to the lakes and the rivers that you're used to.
Yeah.
Maybe that's probably where the good swimming spots are.
Can we
find out how? Oh man, I bet the Bethel's Lake is not a good place to swim.
No, but we knew that. We knew it wasn't at the time, right?
Yeah, I think so, and probably who knew her as well. I don't know.
I think Pupuki? About some of the places I've swum.
Oh.
Lake Pupuki, which just must be all runoff. I mean, it must be, right? I mean, otherwise, how do they get fresh water there?
Apparently, apparently, there's a freshwater inflow under the water, and it's unclear where it comes from, through lava tunnels from somewhere.
Uh-huh.
There was speculation that it might be from Rangitoto, connected to Rangitoto. I believe.
The Wilberforce report. It will tell you all about it, I think.
Yeah, that's the one.
And other unsurprising news.
Next story.
Bill Gates thinks Windows 8... and the Surface laptops are incredible. Just days ahead of the release of Windows 8, the Surface tablet, Microsoft's co-founder and chairman Bill Gates offered his opinion on the company's latest products, and he seems to be rather fond of them. Naturally. Meanwhile, over on Stuff, new Windows baffles long-time users. Oh, I should push the button.
Next story.
New Windows baffles long-time users. The release of Microsoft's Windows, blah, blah, blah. Consumers are in for a shock. Blah, 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 blah. So anyway, we don't know what the truth is. We'll all get used to it, I'm sure. But actually, I'm sick of talking about Windows 8.
Good, done.
How about a moratorium on Windows 8 until it's actually out, which I think is next week probably, or this week possibly.
Okay.
Next story.
Here is more news that's unsurprising. Hotel Wi-Fi rates a rip-off. Hotels are charging exorbitant rates for Wi-Fi, and guests are much better paying for mobile internet. A consumer advocate says a survey of New Zealand's top central city hotels, as rated by Five Star Alliance, has found only two offer free wireless internet in rooms, despite some exclusive suites costing more than $2,000 a night. Can you imagine paying $2,000? I mean, if you're paying $2,000 a night for a room, you probably don't give a shit about add-ons. But a $2,000 a night room should include not only Wi-Fi, but a back rub, for God's sake.
Yes.
What's going on in New Zealand?
Doesn't it?
I don't think it does. In Thailand, it bloody well would. Happy ending. Other top hotels either make guests buy packets of data or charge up to $45 a day. And this is why I use my phone. I use mobile data, which seems insane, because aside from by comparison with hotel Wi-Fi rates, mobile data is also exorbitant. But when compared to hotels, It seems pretty reasonable. Frankly, pretty reasonable.
Next story.
And news that just absolutely shocked me. Fidel Castro is alive. I was sure that there was a funeral. I mean, I'm sure I remember a massive state funeral. But
and I had this conversation with someone at work as well, and a British person I work with, who was a Scottish person from the UK I work with, who apparently informs me that Margaret Thatcher is still alive.
Right, but she's got Alzheimer's or something, right?
She's crazy, but I thought she was still alive. I thought she was dead.
No, she's not crazy. She has dementia.
Yeah, okay.
She was crazy in the 80s. Now she's got an excuse.
Right.
The lady is not for turning, Dylan.
Sorry.
Turning senile. And in more news that's fit to make
Next
you go,
story.
What the hell were you doing? Screams, save man from rubbish truck. A man was lucky to escape alive after being tipped into a rubbish truck from a skip bin early this morning. This was in Australia. A fire and emergency services spokesman said the driver had just tipped the contents of a skip into the back of his truck about 4:30 in the morning when he heard noises coming from his truck from the back. And the man screams alerted the driver, who called police. Fire and rescue crews were sent to help retrieve the man who was trapped. Apparently, he says he was trying to retrieve a laptop from the bin. What?
Very weird.
What? So I don't suppose you've got a...
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Urban Dictionary.
I don't, sorry.
Well, it's good news then that I've got...
Best of life hacker.
I actually haven't. Corrections, we've never made a mistake.
No, there haven't been any ever.
Corrections.
We may have made a mistake once or twice.
Corrections.
Quite often.
Corrections.
Pretty much everything I say. Hey, Dylan.
Hey.
Discourse.co.nz/VPN.
What's your auntie been talking about?
Tell you what my auntie's been talking about. The new Iron Man 3 trailer.
Oh, yeah?
No spoilers, but Tony Stark's in it. And Pepper Potts. And the Mandarin.
Is that it?
Yep.
It's just more Iron Man.
What do you expect? It's Iron Man 3.
I thought maybe they'd have, you know, mixed it up a little.
It's Iron Man 3. It's 100% the Hulk.
Yeah. All right, that's fine then.
Yeah, just as long as there's no more dancing, because I tell you what, the dancing in Iron Man 2, bad. They should have taken a hint from Spider-Man 3, I think, when Spider-Man went emo instead of dancing. That was a mistake.
My auntie's been talking about the Mindy Project. How about that?
I haven't even heard of the Mindy Project. Tell me about the Mindy Project.
Mindy Kaling from The Office.
Yeah.
It's a show. It's about her.
Yeah.
It's not really her, though. It's her. She's called Mindy.
Yeah.
The character's called Mindy. It's played by Mindy, and it's called The Mindy Project.
Yeah.
But she's a doctor. She's not in the show. And it's, you know, it's just one of those shows. She's a doctor, and her life's all weird, and she's... It's kind of fun. I enjoy the bits I've seen of it.
Yeah.
The VHSs I've received have amused me.
Remain to be convinced. Am I going to look on IMDb and say this is a 4? IMDb,
The Mindy Project.
Because you have not excellent taste. 6.1.
There you go, it's more than a 4.
I think 6 is probably the cutoff point, but, okay, so she's an obstetrician gynecologist.
Yeah, like I said, a doctor.
I don't know.
Oh, maybe it's shit. I don't know. You decide.
It looks like one of those ones. One of those ones, you know.
It's new.
With the quirky young woman and her beautiful friends.
Yep, but it's new.
It's new, so it's new. I suggest you should, if you like seeing people get punched in the face with elbows and knees, you should watch The Ultimate Fighter, which is now in season whatever the hell. And it's not the same as UFC. It's a reality show about people trying to get into the UFC by beating the shit out of each other.
Which is not like the UFC, because in the UFC they're already in the UFC beating the shit out of each other.
Exactly. So that is quite an important distinction.
Very, I would say.
I quite like watching it, but then I quite like, you know, martial arts stuff. And so,
hey, did you watch more Red Dwarf? I haven't seen any of the new series of Red Dwarf.
No, I haven't watched any more.
I won't bother talking about that.
It's just the same as it was. There's a couple of other things. Just very quickly, we can talk about Alphas, which I'm still watching and enjoying. It's deep into season 2 now.
What is Alphas?
It's a show about mutants who've developed special powers. But they're not like...
don't care.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, we've seen that story before. You know what we haven't seen before? Never mind the Buzzcocks. It's only England's bitterestest music panel game show.
See, now it's ostensibly about music in the same way that, if you remember back to New Zealand television, Game of Two Halves was kind of about sports.
Yeah.
And that you don't actually have to know anything about music to enjoy That's watching right. it. It's just kind of funny anyway.
That's right. Aurelia, and it sounds like we both recommend Never Mind the Buzzcocks.
Three.
So I suggest you might want to get your auntie to send you a VHS for that.
Two. Don't forget to rewind the tape.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye. See you next week. Love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
You're listening to the weekly show on sorry. With course.
We're using that one.
So while you hinted at and disparaged my podcast, we got distracted before we mentioned it.
Ah, shit.
I don't care.
All right, it's talk about it next week when episode one is up.
Oh, I'm not sure it'll be next week, maybe the week after, but we'll see.
All right. Are you going to do it every couple of weeks or whenever you have time?
We'll see how we go.
That is a good idea. That is a good idea. Jeez, weekly, man. Fucking hell.
Yeah, who'd do that? What a dumb thing.
Very smart, though. It's I think that a lot of people will be interested in your show who are not post professionals, because I mean, for instance, I read a lot of, you know, like Motionographer and all that other shit that and I'm not a post guy. I read it because it's interesting, so don't be afraid of talking about the consumer side of stuff a little bit. I mean, I'm really interested in the GoPro 3 stuff that you spoke about.
It looks amazing. I can't wait to get my hands on one. We'll talk. I think it'll be interesting to see where we go, because ostensibly, it's about post-production, but really only sort of half of us do post-production that much, of the people who want to be involved in the show. Although, we've got a very good guest lined up at some point in the not-so-distant future, who I'll tell you about when we're not streaming on the internet.
All right. That's a deal. Anyway, so I think that's cool, and I hope that I hope you get heaps of listeners. And I think in that niche, you should be able to, because I think that's an area where people are really thirsty for more information about how to do it better.
Well, so far, I have tens.
Wow, tens.
I think.
You're already big in the discourse. Tens. Golly. I mean, because you've got like that Creative Cow hookup, and that community's pretty big, and so you should be able to drive a lot of listeners.
Soon. I'm going to do some bit more stuff there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to synergize.
Yeah.
And diverge and diversify.
Yeah, you're going to boil the ocean? You're going to open the kimono?
Oh, yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Do you do any on this podcast? Do you do like stats and stuff through Blueberry or whatever?
No.
All right. Interesting stuff. You can because you get it to put a it's down. You get it to put a redirect in your thingy.
Mm.
Your what's it?
Yeah.
You know your RSS feed. It puts a redirect in, and then it's just like Google. It's like, you know, Google Analytics that tracks everyone who looks for your file.
So it's better than FeedBurner?
I don't know. I don't use FeedBurner.
Right. I use FeedBurner and I don't like it at all.
Do you use PowerPress?
Yes.
PowerPress is from Blueberry, so it kind of integrates.
Yeah. Do you pay for that?
No, there's a free version and there's a paid-for version. The paid-for version has some deeper stuff, and you can actually do the hosting through them as well. But the free version just gives you the stats.
Mm. Yeah, so I liked your show. You could get rid of two of the speakers. Just monologues. I think monologues are the future of internet radio. We've experimented with it on Discourse in the past. Monologues, it went great.
I don't have the confidence for it. I don't think I can keep myself. It's bad enough, my umming and ahhing and you knowing in a conversation. I don't think I could do it.
So we need to decide in advance when who is going to do the actual thank you, goodbye for guests.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because that was a bit uncomfortable.
Well, I thought we were doing that and then it went weird and I wasn't sure what was happening. I got confused.
Like when I started talking about mouth pissing and eye blood.
Yeah, yeah, it all went a bit strange at that point.
Well, I guess the thing is, I just think it's weird that I mean, I'm now just to put my cards on the table. I'm not excited by urination. I enjoy urinating in a toilet or off a cliff or in a pool. You know,
I've got to go. I'm going to go and see what my baby's up to.
And he is probably enjoying urination himself. And I enjoy it in the same way. I just think it's weird. I think it's weird that pornography with urination is obscene. And,
going now.
And
bye.
Urination is not. Thank you, Dylan. Fish and chips, fish and chips, fish and chips.
This show is cancelled. Beep.